Welcome to Minority Landlords Podcast, your manual to financial freedom. Are you looking to escape the 9-to-5 rat race? Do you want to earn passive income while building generational wealth for you and your family and don't know how to get started? Well, you're at the right place. Here at Minority Landlords, we're here to help educate minorities about real estate investing. And now your host, Pepe Amoti.
Hey everyone, it's your host Pepe with the 44th episode of Minority Landlords Podcast. Today we'll be chatting with the one and only Jack Alwell. He's an actuary, author, and a real estate investor with several rental properties across a few states. He's got an incredible story about that light bulb moment that got him to start investing in real estate. But before we dive in this episode, I'd like to let you all know that this episode is sponsored by Pathfinder.io. Pathfinder is a revolutionary mobile app designed to streamline the rental application process for both landlords and prospective tenants. And using cutting-edge technology, Pathfinder matches landlords and their properties with possible renters. Like the dating app Tinder, the matching process is based on information provided by both parties. That can help both landlords and prospective renters save money, time, and reduce that frustration that we all feel when dealing with the tenant selection process. Again, Pathfinder helps match your landlords with exactly the kind of tenant that you all want. So go and check out Pathfinder.io for more information. Now back to Jack. Jack, I'm super thrilled to have you today and welcome to Minority Landlords Podcast. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Pepe. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for coming through. I've been looking forward to this. So yeah, Jack, tell us a little bit about your story and how you got started in real estate investing.
Sure, absolutely. So I grew up in a very small town in Michigan, about 100 miles north of Detroit. Moved down to Charlotte in 2015 for a new job. Knew zero people in Charlotte. I was paying a lot in rent initially. I think it was like $1,400 for one of those, I guess you would call it like a luxury apartment with like a pool and a gym, which I wasn't really using a ton because I was studying for actuarial exams. Yeah. And it was a kind of a turbulent time in my life, a lot of changes. I had worked under three different bosses in a year and a half at my new job. And I lost my job at end of 2016. So I lost my job. Luckily, I had actually moved out of that luxury apartment like 6 months before that. And I was, and I had realized I wasn't getting to use a lot of the amenities there. Right. So I was like, well, I should try to lower my rent while I can and try to find cheaper housing. And I found an interesting spot with it, this nonprofit organization where I basically got subsidized housing for putting some events on for the community. And in return, I got, you know, subsidized housing. So it was like $500 a month. So that was great. Great
That's
setup.
Good deal.
And honestly, I was pretty grateful that I had that because I was able to save some money leading up to that layoff. So I had saved some money. And I decided to take a trip just to, you know, clear my head, figured, you know, I had always complained not having enough time to do anything. And now I saw myself, no job, but a lot of time. And I took a trip to Europe. I call this my roots trip. I went to see where my grandparents grew up in Poland and Hungary. And I oddly enough met my now wife in Austria. So that's pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But when I was in Poland, in Krakow, I went to the Auschwitz concentration camp. Now, my grandfather had grown up in Krakow, and Auschwitz is like a 40-minute drive, I'd say. And it's just very surreal learning about these things in books and then seeing it in real life. And I started reading a lot from that experience. And I read from like World War II to soccer books. And eventually I found a love for podcasts, and my brother got me into real estate podcasts like Bigger Pockets and such, and just started. And I decided that as soon as I got another job, I was going to buy a house and rent out the rooms, also known as a house hack. So, and I thought, by doing that, now, even though I had cheap rent, I thought if I had a house, if I needed to like leave, I could just rent out my room and go wherever. Cause even though I had cheap rent, I still kind of felt stuck. Like I was still having to pay the rent. Yeah. I wasn't really getting much out of it because I was traveling around. I went back to Michigan and stayed with my parents for a little bit just as a reset. Yeah. So I decided at that point I wanted to make my life a little more robust and a little more resilient to anything like a firing happening again. So that's what I did. 2017 rolled around. I had a new job, also as an actuary. Mm. And bought a four bedroom house, 3.5 baths, and rented out 3 of the rooms.
Oh, that's kind of when great. It started. That's awesome. Amazing story. So where was that house located?
Yeah. So that was in the southern part of Charlotte, mm. North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I'm still living in that house. It was about 20 minute drive from downtown, or we call it uptown actually. Yeah. So it's not super like walkable, I'd say, but it's still pretty close to things. Mm. And it did have a pool. That was one thing that I thought if I was going to do a house hack and just me personally, and we can talk about this too, but I love the idea of having a pool. Mm. And then, you know, once I had to start maintaining it, I didn't like it so much.
Yeah. But hard work maintaining a pool.
Yeah. And a good amount of money on like the chemicals. And I did find a good pool service actually eventually that was like $50 a month, or sorry, $50 a visit. And they were coming out like once per week. It's about $200, but that was about what I was paying for chemicals when I was doing it myself. Now I might've been getting upcharged on the chemicals because I would just take a water sample into the store. They tell me, yeah, put these chemicals in these. And, it was just very, very time consuming and quite expensive.
That's amazing. So did you pool hack the pool too? You know how like they would do house hacking and now there's all kind of platforms where you can actually rent out your pools as well. I just thought so of pool hacking.
I had not heard of that at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, once I got the roommates in, everyone was actually pretty helpful about like just because we have a lot of trees. So there's a lot of leaves that fall in the pool. They were actually pretty good about helping out, just scooping up leaves that had fallen in. Mm. We did not pool hack, unfortunately.
Yes. So that particular property, do you you still own it, still live there, I assume, with your wife. Do you still rent out their bedrooms or how's that working?
So now we do not. So she moved in permanently last year and we did there was like 2 or 3 months where we still had the roommates because initially the thought was we would buy a different house and then just rent out this whole house, but that did not come to fruition. Just the prices were surging so much in Charlotte and what we were looking at and purchasing, it was not as nice as what this is. And it was somewhat unfortunate because I had about 1.5 years into the house hack, the interest rates had gone down and I decided to refinance and to capture that lower interest rate, but I had put it on a 15-year mortgage instead of a 30. Mm. So it was actually about the same payment, but had I known we weren't going to have the roommates for the whole time, I might've chosen a little differently.
Right.
So just from a cash perspective, but we are paying off about $1,200 a month now in principal.
Oh,
so,
that's not
I
bad.
Mean, that was excellent while we had the roommates, but.
Right. So since that deal, how many more units have you, how many more properties and units have you bought since?
Sure. So I got super into the podcast scene, I guess, after I house hacked. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got my training wheels with these podcasts and long story short, I guess we have 13 units now outside of our primary resident and 12 of the units are in Michigan over 4 different properties. And then we have 1 short-term rental in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Mm. So that's where we're at. The first 5 units, there were 2 single families and a 3 unit I acquired in 2018. Mm. And those were through cold calling. I was actually cold calling property managers to see if any of their clients were looking to offload. And that's how acquired those and got a pretty good deal on those. I think the cash flow hasn't been quite as good as I would have thought on those, but I probably need to go back to this, but I have not raised the rents on those in like 4 years. So probably room for improvement or just looking to possibly sell those and move on up. through one of those 1031 exchanges. But
that makes sense.
Sense. And then the seven unit bought just last summer, and those rents we've increased quite a bit.
Mm.
And then the short term rental we purchased in December. So that's kind of the lay of the land.
that's a great number of units you got there. So let's talk about financing. How do you finance your deals?
Sure. So the first set of five units over three properties. Now they're all in like a 30-mile radius. They're not in the same city, but they're relatively close. They can be managed by the same property manager. So I went to typical banks initially to try to get financing, and the story was the same at most of them, or all of them. I just didn't have a track record. They weren't comfortable lending me money. So I had just pitched it to the sellers, you know, would you seller finance this for me? So instead of, you know, paying payments to a bank, I'm now paying to the sellers, and I offered them, I think interest rates were around, like, I think my primary was like 3.5 at that time. And I offered this couple 6%. And the dollar amount, the purchase price was about a third less than they had listed it, or like pitched it to me originally. Cause I had never been in these. I bought them sight unseen, but I just thought it was such a good deal. I just went with it, and they were going through a divorce, and I had known the property manager. So, so that was seller financed. Now I had pretty aggressively paid those off over about a 19-20 month period. And so that helped me go to a traditional bank last summer and get financing for the seven unit. So the seven unit was traditional financing. I did have to put 25% down, but that was a traditional route. And then the short-term rental actually took a bit of a loan for my 401k. And then combine that with a loan for my uncle, actually, to purchase that. So get to pay him interest instead of a bank. So
that's great. That's great. No, seller financing is the way to go. And I really like how lately it's been becoming more popular in the real estate scene. So you finance your seven units and then the short term as well. So you say you have some other units that's already paid off. Is that right?
Yeah. So the first five units that I got in 2018 over, there was a three unit and then two single families. Those are totally paid off now.
Wow, congratulations. That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Wow. So back to your portfolio, how much is your gross rent across the board?
Sure. So, well, I'll split up the long-term rentals, the ones in Michigan are grossing about $6,300. And the expenses about $5,300, so netting about $1,000. And the loan pay down on the seven unit is about $500 a month right now. So that's $6,000, I think, of getting added to my net worth over the year through the loan pay down.
Right.
And then the short term rental is it might be a little positive, maybe $50 to $100 a month. It's very seasonal. So like, in the summers, like a lot of weekends, it's renting for like $350 a night. But like in the winters, it might be lucky to rent out, I don't know, 2-3 times a month. So that's like another nuance with that one is like my wife and I can actually go and like use it for a couple weeks, like in October when it's not really that busy, but it's still warm enough to like go in the ocean. And so that's kind of a cool feature.
Yeah.
And That Myrtle Beach area, I just thought was a little more likely to appreciate. So we were kind of okay with taking less in cash flow for that and the added benefits that we could use it a little bit throughout the year.
Right. No, that's great. So it seemed like, so most of your deals, like it seemed like you are doing some cold calling. It seems like you're not really doing a lot of like getting deals out of MLS. Is that right? Are you doing most of your stuff off market?
The Myrtle Beach, the condo in the condo tell that was on the MLS.
Okay.
The first five units was through cold calling, and that couple that was offloading those actually had used a realtor kind of to like facilitate the closing, and I had stayed in touch with her, and Last summer when I was back in Michigan, just working remotely on my lunches, I would meet up with her and she'd show me some properties. And this 7 unit was about to go on MLS, but hadn't yet. So she kind of just showed it to me before. So that's kind of how I've got them. And then my house hack, it was on the MLS. The house, I think, was technically about to go into foreclosure. The agent actually ended up giving up her commission to let the deal go through because there were some liens. The former owner had some issues. My realtor actually gave up her commission to get the deal to go through.
Oh, wow.
Very, very nice of her.
Yeah, that's incredible to have such a kind of a realtor out there to do that. So that's impressive. So walk us through one of your deals that, like, let's talk about one of your great deals that I think it's just everything went perfect as you had expected. And then maybe one of your worst deals that you think it didn't really meet your expectations and what happened, like what it was and whatnot.
I guess I'd say the 5 units were kind of like both of those. Like it was like in my mind, like it was such a great deal. Cause like originally they were asking like for 90 grand for the 3 properties. I got them for 60. Oh, and wow. those had been, and this is in 2018, they were bringing in $2,200 a month, which sounded like just like a slam dunk. So, right. and since then, now we haven't raised the rents really, which it's kind of hard to get the management. I mean, I feel like the incentives are kind of like if we're, you know, going from, and some of the 3 unit, the rents are very cheap. We're talking like $350.
Oh, wow.
So even if
we raise those up, if there's some rooms,
even if we move them up to like 450, I mean, the property management companies only get an extra 10 bucks a month. So it's so it's just thinking about things like that. So the cash flow, I guess, has been going down a little bit over the years. The internal rate of return would be great if we sold those because I think the Zestimates on those are crazy. They're like $250,000 now, but I would think it's more probably around like 200 if we were looking to sell. So the internal rate of return would be very good if we just sold them, but the cash flow has been a lot lower, I guess, than I would have thought for that. And there was just some things that I didn't really think about like going in. Like I didn't think that the owners would choose not to pay for insurance. So like early on when I got those 5 units, I was calling the owner to figure out who they had their insurance through. And they're like, oh yeah, we opted not to pay for insurance. And then, so when I went to shop for insurance, then they said, you know, the garage needs a new roof. So that was a quick, like, I think it was like $4,500. So that was something I wasn't really expecting early on. So I guess just something for the listeners to keep in mind to, I guess, do a proper due diligence.
Yeah, definitely.
It was kind of rushed in the sense, but I mean, the numbers sounded so good. Like, I mean, like, what's really the risk? I guess maybe that's not the best way. And maybe now that I know some of the things, I wouldn't have done the deal to begin with, but it's been a pretty good purchase. And we are considering just selling some of those and moving up.
That's good. So question on that. So did you end up fixing the roof before they could insure it? Is that, how did that happen?
Yeah. So, right. So I had to fix that garage roof, even though no one was living in it. It was like this garage that was kind of used for storage, but nobody technically had a key. We were the only ones with the key. So they technically weren't supposed to go in there, but the insurance people said, that roof needs to be fixed before we'll insure the house. So I had to pay the $4,000, the $4,500, whatever it was. And then they would insure it.
That's interesting. So was that like one of your not so great? Or that was a great, good deal since it ended up turning up good at the end?
I would say it's kind of like, but like it's a great deal, but like for a different reason. Like when I initially bought it, I thought it was just going to cash flow like crazy. And it hasn't really done that. I have had a couple evictions throughout the years. But I mean, I guess most of the units have been pretty good. And like I said, we haven't raised the rents. I guess obviously we could increase the cash flow a little bit, but I'm kind of just deciding whether I want the property manager to go through all that hassle if we're just gonna like sell it.
Right. So are those like what class properties are those? Would you say?
So I would say they're B and C properties. Yeah. Mm. Now the 7 unit I'd say is definitely in better condition. Mm. I'd classify as that like a B type of area. I mean, this is in Bay City, Michigan. It's relatively close to the downtown, and you could walk to downtown. So
that's awesome.
Pretty nice area.
Yeah. So you got some great portfolio out there. So what's your short term goal and long term goals? Like, so you say it seems like some of your properties you're trying to maybe sell it sometime soon. Are you just like, what's your goal?
So it's kind of, So I kind of stopped looking. I just felt like the rent ratios were getting a little out of whack. So I was trying to think about what we should do. And I actually stumbled upon this idea of just buying vacant land and flipping it like out west. Yeah. So we have been doing that about the last 3 months. And we took a class through, it's called the Land Geek. Mm-hmm. And I've been pretty happy with it so far. So we've bought some property in like the desert of Arizona and then just sold it to people. And they've been on terms deals. So it's kind of it's like cash flow for us every month. Mm. So it seems like a pretty good gig. And what we're going to try to, I'd say the next 2 years, I'd say the goal is probably like 4,000 a month if we can get in passive. That would be great. Now, whether it's through more of this like land flipping or increasing rents and getting more rentals, we're not so sure. Trying to be flexible and just go with the flow a little bit more and just trying to learn as much as possible. I mean, long term, obviously, we'd like to get our cash flow to be above our expenses, which are pretty high right now. And we've actually been exploring like just selling our primary resident and like, I mean, it's kind of not a lot of people have heard of this, but like Cobb houses, like they look like clay. And they're relatively inexpensive to create. So we've been looking into things like that where we could just buy a plot of land and build a Cobb house for ourselves and maybe live without a mortgage. So in my mind, that would be pretty nice because right now our mortgage payment's like $2,300 a month. So kind of tough.
Yeah, no, I feel that. That's the beauty about real estate. There's a lot of different strategies. There's a lot of different ways you can go about doing things. Just some few questions here for you. Like growing up, so it seems like you're doing pretty great balancing between real estate and you still have your W-2 job as well. And you're an author. It seems like you have a lot of things going on. How's that been playing out? Like, it seems like you're a very busy guy. You have two books and two books and
there's
whatnot.
There's two that kind of sell. There's one other journal that doesn't really sell, but the other two sell. Yeah. It's, sometimes it's stressful. Been trying to, I guess, build up the skills of outsourcing things that really I don't need to be doing. So, like I said, I love reading, and my brother and I started a podcast where we just record ourselves discussing books.
Oh, cool.
And after a while of editing the videos, I just decided, okay, I think I've had enough of this. I'm going to outsource this part of my life. It was fun to learn, but so I like learning a lot of things, but then trying to weigh what things to outsource. Tax preparation, for example, like now pay, and this was included in the the rental expenses, but we're paying like $4,000 for like tax advice and tax planning. So that's like one thing, trying to invest in areas and just make our lives simpler. But it's sometimes tough, but it's a lot of fun too.
Right.
It's kind of all these different things.
Definitely. I agree. So yeah, some final questions I have for you. So what was your dream job growing up before you ever thought of real estate and all that?
My dream job was definitely, I was not a huge Arsenal fan at that time, but I wanted to be like a professional soccer player and play central midfield. That was kind of my dream.
Right.
So
we talked about a huge Arsenal fan too, by the way. That's one of the other things we have in common from real estate, math related stuff, Arsenal. It's awesome.
Yeah, and then I think I had for a brief period, just it was more, I think, the outside forces kind of saying like, oh, yeah, you should be like a pediatrician.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I took a human physiology class and we had to dissect a pig. Yeah. I was just like, oh, I don't think I can get through. I think I need to find something else to do.
Yeah, that's funny. Say that's the same issue I had too. My initial goal was to go into med school, and I was like, and then I changed to nursing, and then I did this internship in my local hospital and in an emergency room, and I'm like, no, I don't think I'll do this. So I was like, totally rejected that. But yeah, so what advice would you give to new real estate investors? We have a lot of new folks in these platforms who are, you know, in their beginning phases, or they're just trying to get started and still wanting to get that courage, trying to learn more before they jump in. What advice would you give them as someone who've built a pretty good portfolio?
I would say the more books you can read and the more viewpoints you can acquire, the better you'll because I just don't think that hurts at all. Just reading up and trying to understand more behind like the numbers, like what is net operating income? What is a cap rate?
Right.
Things like that will really help you in the long term to like understand the language of real estate going forward. I mean, I love podcasts, like your podcast. All these real estate podcasts are really great and they're a little bit, I think more entertaining than just sitting down and just reading a book by yourself.
That's true.
So that's good. And then I would say the sooner you can get some skin in the game, the better. So whether that is a house hack, I think house hacking probably would be my recommended way to get in. Cause I mean, it's just like landlording with training wheels. Like, I mean, it's, you need a living expense or a sleeping expense anyway. You might as well like use it to parlay your education and learn how to screen tenants, learn how to show a person through a property.
Right.
And just get some of those skills so you have a better sense of what it's like to get a property and then run it.
Right. Definitely. No, I agree. House hacking is the best way to get started because you make a lot of mistakes. You learn a lot. And that's how most of us start. Like even I started with house hacking a triplex. And it's the best thing I would say. It's perfect way to get started. And it's very, it's not that expensive either to get started, you know? I definitely agree with you. So aside from go ahead.
I was just going to say, because when it's your primary residence, oftentimes, you only need like 3.5-5% down. Whereas if you were to just do it for an investment, you might need 20-25% of the down. So it's a great way to get in.
It's more achievable. Definitely. I agree with that. So aside from work and real estate, and soccer, what else do you do for fun? Do you play soccer as well? Or do you just,
I've kind of now been relegated to watching and I still juggle. Yeah. Like I'll just juggle, but I don't play in too many games. I have picked up pickleball. That's where I get most of my exercise. And I like that quite a bit.
That's
little less running.
That's awesome. Yeah. Soccer can be pretty intense. So what does success mean to you?
I think from my perspective, if you have a good family unit, I would say that's successful.
That's true.
Just maintaining that good family unit is probably how I would define it. But in terms of financially, I mean, I hope to have my passive income be greater than my expenses, and so that would be a great thing. I think most people should try to strive for that, whether you like your job or not. Just gives you more options and probably makes you a little more light feeling having that security.
No, that's true. And I totally agree. And it's very, and that's why I love real estate. It's very limitless, right? Most of us like know our W-2 jobs. Like let's say if you make 100K, it's 100K. You get that extra couple of thousand every year. But like, you know, but with real estate, you know, the sky's the limit pretty much. Mm-hmm. You can make as much. It's all depend on your strategy, how you put yourself out there and whatnot. So I definitely agree. So where can our audience find or reach out to you if they want to?
Sure. So I'm the only Jack Allwile on LinkedIn. That's probably the place I'm most active on. I do have a personal finance blog called Fired to Fire. And my brother and I do a podcast called the Brothers on Books podcast, and that's brothersonbooks.com. So those are the places where you can reach out to me.
Great, great. Hey, thanks so much, Jack. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming. I'm sure our listeners will get inspired and learn a lot from you. So thank you for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me, Pepe.
Thank you for listening to Minority Landlords Podcast. Please like and subscribe and leave us a rating on iTunes so that we can reach as many people as possible. We will appreciate it if you tell your friends and family, too, about the podcast. Also, visit us at MinorityLandlords.com.